I missed being able to see the pan adapter and watch that.
Yeah, that's the one thing that's nice about that. You can look at the silly AM, IBOC AM signals on the silly AM IBOC signals on the broadcast stations.
Yeah, those are bizarre looking, aren't they?
What a stupid... You know, that whole thing had to be just a big payoff deal of some sort. Let me go back to the other processor here. You know, all of these things were engineered, you know, decades ago for, you know, thinking about an AM station being, you know, having a bandwidth of, you know, around, you know, or very close to 20 kc. Then all of a sudden they changed the rules and turned it to 30 with IBOC. That just seemed crazy.
Well, now, is that extra tail they have at each end, that's the information that the feeds the display in the radios?
Well, that's the digital audio. That's the digital audio. It's in the upper sideband and the lower sideband, and that means they have to take and restrict the regular AM portion to, well, I think most of them stay around 6 or 7 kc, because you gotta leave an opening there, 3 or 4 kc, so your regular analog signal doesn't bang into your IBOC signal that starts at 10 kc and goes to 15 kc. Starts 10 kc below the carrier frequency and goes to 15, and then the other one starts 10 kc above the carrier and goes to 15, and that's where all that racket comes from. And the other thing that's stupid about that is that it's not in real time. So I was talking to the chief engineer of the WGN, and they're saying they can't run that thing when they're not running much anymore at all, I don't think, but when they try to do real time stuff, like they have a lot of people to go out to the Cubs Park and they want to listen to their announcers, they can't, because to run IBOC, it's got 5 or 6 seconds worth of delay. They have to delay their main channel, you know, and they don't really want to delay the main channel. They want it in real time with the game. So people sit there with their radios trying to listen to the commentary and watch the live game. You know, they have to turn the IBOC off for that. Seems like a very stupid thing. When I drive around in my car, when I'll turn on the AM, an AM station like BBM, yeah, you go under a viaduct and the thing jumps back to the analog signal and loses some high frequency response. You come out and then all of a sudden, you know, the high frequency response, you know, comes back. It's kind of annoying to even have it on a radio in the car.
That, okay, I didn't realize it worked like that.
Oh yeah, they've got to put the main channel in time with the IBOC signal. So to put the main channel in, oh here, my level's down. To put the main channel in time with the IBOC signal, they have to delay it. They put a digital delay on the analog signal and run it off, you know, 6 or 5, 6, 7 seconds. So that it matches the IBOC signal. So the whole thing's it seems like an idiot's delight.
Yeah, I can't listen to WGN and watch TV at the same time. It doesn't work.
You mean the AM radio station?
Right. If I don't like say they're on ESPN or something, I want to listen to WGN for a Cub game, but ESPN is covering it. Can't do it because the time is way off.
Yeah, the timing on all this stuff, with all this digital stuff, is now, you know, it's all shot through the... It's all too confusing. And then if at home you're watching it and you've got a TiVo unit you know, like a Moxie or a TiVo, like I've got here, there's another digital timing delay. So it's just impossible to try to match up. Like you were talking about, John, you know, listening to the radio broadcast and the television broadcast, one could be 5 second delay, the other one could be 10, one could be real time, one could be off 5 or 6. You know, you just don't know.
Yeah, for sure. It's complicated. K9GSB. WB9DNZ.
N9BR. I've got to find something to drink, like a glass of pop or something. I'll be right back.
Dibia9AD. Yeah, and the whole digital TV thing is a screwy thing. You know, we end up, once again, in the United States here, we end up adopting the worst system, NTSC, which, I mean, it's gone now, but, I mean, we adopted the worst system, NTSC, which was, well, I guess it was, you know, 60 fields, 30 frames, because we have 60-cycle AC, but, you know, with that, you end up with that 19750 horizontal sweep frequency, so you hear the squealing off the TV. You end up with a crappier resolution, 525 instead of 625 lines. But we did the same thing with digital TV. We've got the most inferior digital TV system, because over in Europe, you can drive around in a car and you'll have a perfectly stable digital TV signal. Because the system they're using over there deals with multipath without any problem at all. This one here is just as bad as old analog TV. It just, you know, drops out and everything. So, once again, we've adopted another bad, you know, and probably it was probably some, you know, monetary payoff that had them adopt the system we're using now for television in this country.
Oh, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, I'm already hearing those. But what Larry said, and I'm like,
oh, I don't know what. I don't know anything about. You know, I'm not in the business anymore. But that's all I've heard from my people who are still in the business. You know that. You know, we should be on the European standard for digital. I guess the transmitter takes. I think our transmitters here require a little less power, but, you know, you're not going to get the range, I don't think. And it's also multipath. Apparently, you can drive around in a car with a little, you know, whip antenna or whatever on the European digital signals and watch it without any breakup. That, you can't do that here.
I think Larry said all this readjustment he was talking about last night was due to Germany.
I don't know.
Are they changing standards here?
No, Larry's a neighbor of mine. He's in the TV industry. He manages several different stations across the country, I think including the TBS down in Atlanta. But he was mentioning last night about another year and a half, they were going to realign the channels, get ready for the big frequency sell-off by the government. So he was telling us a little bit about that last night.
Well, I don't know anything about that, but I don't know how they switch to a different system than we're using. But right now, I mean, that whole digital thing was the most screwball deal I ever saw. I mean, they still have like a low-powered VHF station on in Chicago on Channel 6, low power. And that thing just has some slides on it, and it's on 88. You can pick it up on the bottom of the FM dial, so they're using it as an FM station. The whole thing I mean, they're promoting themselves as an FM station. They're putting out a low power old analog NTSC signal on channel 6, and then the FM audio is like 100 KC below the end of the FM broadcast dial. On a car radio, so your car radio's AGC will go down there and pick the thing up. I think there was WNUA, I think that's what it was in Chicago, and went off the air and went back on the air down there. He knows more than me. He's in. I've been out of it for 30 years. But I still have some, you know, friends down there that tell me about some stuff. But that's all I know about the system. being inferior to what's used in Europe as far as transmission.
Well, Dave, I know a hell of a lot less than you do, so I'm just going along for the ride.
Well, me too, Greg, but I swear last night he said this is all because of Germany. Europe, Germany, and what Dave is talking about would all make sense. They want that spectrum.
They were doing... the thing that was so stupid, apparently Channel 2... Well, first of all, Channel 5, I think... when they went on their digital signal, it was on like channel 47 or 52 UHF. Channel 2 in downtown Chicago put their digital channel on what was called the analog channel 3. Why would all these other people be way the heck up in the UHF band and then they had their digital channel displaced by, you know, one VHF channel? The whole thing seemed crazy to me. I don't think that thing is on Channel 3 anymore, but I also heard that when that went on, you know, you've got all these, you know, those little converters that convert things to, like, Channel 3. You know, that was up on the Hancock building, was wreaking havoc. They had to lower the power way down because it was wreaking havoc on everybody's, you know, systems where they were, you know, doing a conversion from a tuner to a Channel 3. Analog NTSC signal. I don't know. The whole thing seemed crazy. And now if they're moving the stations around again, I didn't hear about that, but that's got to be even more ridiculous. What about, you know, what they have to do to their transmitters, and if they're causing these people to move a significant frequency, they're going to have to fool around with antennas and transmitters and everything. Seems pretty bad.
Well, that's what I was thinking, too, that would be quite an ordeal. I thought the time frame you mentioned was like a year and a half, something like that. And I forget what channels they were going to compress it down to, but to free some of the other channels up, like I said, to get ready for the big government sell-off of the spectrum to the wireless industry and maybe some others... services, I don't know. Something like that. He's probably listening. You know, if he's out there, he'll jump in and correct us all, but I know very little about all that. It's a little mind-boggling. That's been rather amazing stuff that's going on there, and I'm confused by the logic of it all, but then again, I don't understand that much. WB9DNZ.
K9JSP, I express your sympathies.
And this R by far in my car, KU8R.
Oh, jeez.
Hello, Paul.
Fine business signal, Paul. W9AD.
Yeah, good evening.
Big signal in here tonight.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I still have, you know, friends that we talk about it once in a while, but doesn't mean anything to me. I don't make a nickel off it anymore.
Well, I'm just, you know, you just got to think. I think when Bill came back, I think he said they were going to compress everything down between 15 and 30, something like that, all the television channels between 15 and 30.
I mean, it's better than if you don't use as much power there. You start to go up, you know, to the end of the dial. When those were VHF stations up there in the, you know, 50, 60 and everything, those things up on top of the Hancock were 5-6 million watts of ERP analog.
Right. Well, let's see. Okay. Is it all this stuff is going to be like in the 500-600 megahertz band or whatever, but it's going to be like channels 15 through 30.
I think that's around 500 megahertz. I don't remember any of that stuff, but you know, it still takes a heck of a lot of power down there. I mean, channel 2, what was that, 40, 50 megahertz? When they were analog, they were about, I think, 25 or 30 visual and about two kilowatts of oral. And then you go up to the UHF stations, and those UHF stations were, you know, several million watts of visual and a couple hundred thousand watts of oral up there. It was quite a lot of juice being pumped out of those things when they were analog.
Well, the local TV station I watch mostly for my news, weather, and sports. It's over in Peoria. It's about 40 miles as the crow flies. And every morning as I'm watching, they say their visual and oral power exceeds, it's a little over 2 million watts as authorized by the FCC.
Obviously, there's a lot of antenna there, but it's still putting out and burning a lot of juice.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Gotta be.
Well, turn off your amplifier, man. We're hearing you too loud.
How you doing tonight, Paul?
Oh, I'm doing good. Am I any louder to you this evening?
Yes, you sure certainly are.
All righty. Well, I went out and put the antenna back up today.
Makes a difference. 40 over.
Ooh, I'll get a check in the mail first thing tomorrow.
All right, we'll keep talking. It might get bigger as it goes.
Well, the payoff is still the same, Jenny.
That's true. At least we can hear you much better this evening.
Well, you all are doing fine here, and I'm on my vertical. I can't, you know, transmit into my dipole, but you all are big time on the receive on the dipole.
No, you're not big on the gauge, but I've got a room full of you. You know, the band's in good shape. You're straight up S9, sometimes 5, maybe 10 over, but no strain, no pain, man. Looks like I got a room full of you.
Yeah, you're doing fine here, Paul. It's about the same thing, 5-10 over on 5 or 10 over on the dipole and a little under 9 on the towers, you know, so that's what we're kind of seeing here. I'm not putting out all that much juice. I went to a different processor setting. It would probably be I don't know. Hola, hola, hola. I think I've closed my thing down. If I went to a different processor setting, it would probably be
get a little more sibilance to it.
A bit. Well, that's a bit too much there, I think. Woof. Hello, 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 hello. There should be a little bit more power there, and not too obnoxious, probably.
Well, you said the tower, and I forget what you said the other one was. Are you using a high tower, or are you just using tower itself as a vertical?
High tower.
Oh, yeah. I tell you, you know, I bought one of those new years ago and got rid of that, but I wish in retrospect I would have hung on to that. Actually, I'd like to have about four of them in a square configuration and dial those things in and use them on 160.
Yeah, I've got two. Down here, they're not even supposed to work. I don't have any tuners in the shack. They're not even supposed to work down here. But when I put both of them together, it increases the bandwidth enough to have half decent SWR here. If I the two of them are in phase, and if I put the two of them are in phase with six delay lines in it, if I throw one of them out of phase, you know, that may change it a little bit for you, but that's, it'll still work here.
with the two of them out of phase and then two of them in phase.
Yeah, do that again. I was watching the gauge. It sounded like I heard a little bit of difference, but let me look at the gauge this time while you do that.
You're probably not going to hear too much. I'm not hearing too much receive on you. This is the two of them in phase. One, two, three, four, five. Out of phase. One, two, three, four, five.
No, actually, I'm seeing about 5 dB.
That's what I saw.
That's about what I'm seeing on receive on you guys.
Well, it's definitely working for you.
They're not even supposed to work at all here. I can't transmit into one of them alone down at this part of the band. I have to have them both on with 6 delay lines. In this position, I get a 1.5 SWR with them out of phase and in phase 2.1.
I'll be darned. Even though you've got some swirl, you actually have more signal with them in phase like that.
They work here, and but again, like I said, if I had the dipole down here, we'd be much better off because I hear everybody better on the dipole.
Yeah, they're probably not going to make much difference. I'm probably asking a stupid question, but you're running them in phase like that. Are they running north-south or east-west, or how do you have them oriented? We're probably so close it ain't going to make much difference anyway.
Directly east and west of each other. In fact, I called up our other buddy, W09J, Mike. I've known him since we were nippers. And, you know, I was just setting the other high tower up. I had one, and I said, I want to get this thing exactly, you know, exactly to the east of the other one. Now, what do I need to do, today? And it happened to be it was on the solstice. He says, nothing. He says, look for the shadow. I called exactly on the right day. He says, when the sun sets, you'll know exactly how to get it exactly to the east of it. So they're exactly east and west of each other. So I know that for sure.
Well, that's good. Let's say you can, depending on where you're trying to work, the way you feed those is going to help. You know, that's going to make it bi-directional for you.
Oh yeah, no, I can go in fire, you know, or broadside. Normally, I can't do that here because, like I told you, I got to have all the delay lines in. But, I mean, I can run a cardioid pattern east or a cardioid pattern west. Or, when I'm in the area where the antennas are more resonant, I can do them broadside or in fire on 40 and 75. And then everywhere else on 20 and every other place, I just, you know, click around until I get a low pointing out in the right direction. This is where I hear somebody better, you know, 99% of the time.
KU8R for ID. I think Greg can pull some of that stuff. I think he's got a couple of verticals that he uses in a similar fashion, but I'm not so sure he's running delay lines. I think he's got a contraption.
I was only for receive, though, Paul. Nothing for transmit.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. That's right.
On those high towers, are those hinged at the bottom where one man can put them up, or you got to assemble them vertically?
You can, yeah. One man, you know, one man can put them up, but it's a little bit difficult. I did it once. The problem is once you get the thing up there, you got to put the bolt in the bottom. And I mean, if you start to lose it, you know, it's right at the point where it needs to be a two-man operation. You know, plus I got a little extra weight up there because I got the 40-meter trap at the top. So there's extra weight there. But I mean, the insulators on the base are, you know, very, very well designed because one day I was... I went to the back door to let the dog out, and I looked out there, and one of the towers was leaning over about 20 degrees. I went running out there like a son of a bitch and pushed the thing up and yelled for the wife to bring me a 2x4, you know, and I pushed it back up and leveled it out. And it speaks very, very highly of the base insulators. There's three of them down there. For them to be holding that tower, as heavy as it is, you know, leaning over at 15 or 20 degrees, I was just completely shocked that, you know, it didn't bust. So I feel pretty secure that, you know, there's just about no wind that's going to blow those things over. I don't have any guys on them, you know. You don't need any guys on them. But it's heavy enough that you really want to put it up with a second person. And while you get it in the upright position, it takes a little bit of, you know, jiggling and a little teeny bit of bending to put the bolts in there. And of course, now after that experience, I double bolted everything on the towers, because that was just from, you know, wind vibration that caused the nut to back off.
Greg, you wouldn't have any.
That's pretty interesting. How come you got a 40-meter trap on the one? I thought those things naturally were resonant on 40.
Oh, they're resonant on 40, so it's a 40-meter trap for 160. So you can run it as an inverted L on 160. That's what that trap is up there for, because I've got them as inverted L's. So, I mean, these things are resonant from, well, the center of the 160 band around 90, I think I got them around 1875 or something. But you need that 40-meter trap to keep, keep it from going out onto the 160 wire, that 110-foot-long wire that's off each of them.
Oh, I get it. I gotcha. That makes sense.
Just to isolate it from that that wire, so that's what that's all about up there. And, of course, the impedance is extremely, you know, low over all the copper. I mean, I got about 8,000 feet of that in the ground. I mean, ever since, as I added more and more copper, the impedance kept going down and down and down. So what I did for matching at the base of each of the towers was click a transformer in there, and that's what I would use to match the towers on 160. But they operate, again, around 1870 to about 1910 or 20. You know, that's about all you can do with them on 160.
Yeah, I didn't think you could even get that much bandwidth. I was thinking like 20 kilohertz or something.
Well, once again, I can play around with these delay lines and get a little bit more like I do here.
Greg, if you're considering one of those, go ahead, man, because they're a piece of cake to put together and get up. They're substantial, as he said, that you don't have to worry about being on them. But they're light enough that makes them easy to work with. The only difficulty is if you put them up section by section, as you would 25 or 45 or something like that, is the stupid things are kill your feet because there's no real rungs to stand on and they're X-braced, and it just makes it very difficult. But other than that, they're not hard to put up at all. They're a piece of cake.
Well, they're a good antenna, and I've thought about buying one at a time or two, but not lately since I put it up that 80-meter vertical that I got. But I do have a trap on it for 40, so it's a dual band, but it is full size for 80. But that Hightower, it's a sweet antenna. I always thought it was. A friend of mine had one, and he had a pair of them, actually, and he always did well with them. Kind of wish I would have invested in those a while back, but never did. But nice antenna. Nice antenna. What time is it? Oh, not quite top of the hour. WB9DNZ. Bill, did you make it back?
Yeah, sitting there having a snack. N9VR.
K9JSP.
Well, to get in sync, can't wait.
Doppel-U9AD. And hey, Bill, I gave a mount to the barbecue joint. We bring back our crazy Esky.
Oh, I know. He likes them.
Yeah, and he does his routine. You know, he'll take it away from me. You know, he'll cry like a baby, take it away, jump up to my mouth, grab it. And then it's like, the minute you go over there, it's the growling and the tail wagging. Like, don't you even think about taking it.
Isn't that funny how they growl and wag their tail at the same time?
Yeah, it's the funniest thing, yeah.
used to have a little long-haired terrier that we inherited from somebody else who had been mistreating the dog. And I loved that dog, called him Dusty, and I went out one day, had fed him.